Srimad-Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, Chapter 10, Text Number 1. Sonaka uvacha hadva svarikta sprita atatayino yudhisthira dharma pritam varishtha sahanjai pratya varuda bhujana katam pravita kim akarasi tata. Sonaka Muni asked, after killing his enemies, who desired to usurp his rightful inheritance, how did the greatest of all religious men, Maharaja Yudhisthira, assisted by his brothers, rule his subjects? Surely he could not freely enjoy his kingdom with unrestricted consciousness. Purport by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Srila Prabhupada. Maharaja Yudhisthira was the greatest of all men of religion. Thus, he was not at all inclined to fight with his cousins for the sake of enjoying the kingdom. He fought for the right cause because the kingdom of Hastinapura was his rightful inheritance, and his cousins wanted to usurp it for themselves. He fought, therefore, for the right cause under the guidance of Lord Sri Krishna, but he could not enjoy the results of his victory because his cousins were all killed in the fight. He therefore ruled over the kingdom as a matter of duty, assisted by his younger brothers. The inquiry was important for Sonaka Rishi, who wanted to know about the behavior of Maharaj Yudhisthira when he was at ease to enjoy the kingdom. So Sonaka Muni asked, after killing his enemies who desired to usurp his rightful inheritance, how did the greatest of all religious men, Maharaj Yudhisthira, assisted by his brothers, rule his subjects? Surely he could not freely enjoy his kingdom with unrestricted consciousness. Well, after killing so many people, 640 million, imagine all the wives of those men. Imagine the hurt of Dhritarashtra and Gandhari. Imagine all the cousin brothers and relatives that were suffering terribly because of all that death. So, therefore, he, as it says here, surely he could not freely enjoy his kingdom with unrestricted consciousness. So, therefore, he ruled as a matter of duty. What does that mean exactly? That means that, just like Bhisma, as a matter of duty, he protected the Kuru dynasty, even though that meant fighting against the Pandavas. He knew it was wrong, but it was his duty to do that. He didn't give up his duty. So this acting as a matter of duty is a theme throughout the Bhagavad Gita. And now we see in the Srimad Bhagavatam, let's say it's a part of Vedic culture. Now, what does it mean exactly? if we look at the third chapter, verse number 19, therefore, without being attached to the fruits of activities, one should act as a matter of duty. For by working without attachment, one attains the Supreme. And purport, Srila Prabhupada says, the Supreme is the personality of Godhead for the devotees and liberation for the impersonalists. A person, therefore, acting for Krishna or in Krishna consciousness, under proper guidance and without attachment to the result of the work, is certainly making progress toward the supreme goal of life. So two elements, under proper guidance and without attachment to the result of the work. If we act on behalf of Krishna with these two, let's say, components, proper guidance and without attachment to the result of the work, one can make progress in Krishna consciousness. Arjuna is told that he should fight in the battle of Kurukshetra for the interest of Krishna because Krishna wanted him to fight. To be a good man or a non-violent man is a personal attachment. Wow, let's read that again. To be a good man or a non-violent man is a personal attachment. But to act on behalf of the Supreme is to act without attachment for the result. That is perfect action of the highest degree recommended by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. So if you want to be a goody-goody guy, and you want to be one of these tree-hugging, so-called non-violent yuppies, that means you have a personal attachment. But to act on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is to act without attachment for the result. That is the perfect action of the highest degree. Vedic rituals, like prescribed sacrifices, are performed for purification of impious activities that were performed in the field of sense gratification. But action in Krishna consciousness is transcendental to the reactions of good or evil work. So we see that all these rituals that people perform, pilgrimages, and fasting, and things like that. And sometimes they make them up. We're going to fast every Monday.
Right.
Or we're going to go on this pilgrimage so that we can take a bath at the confluence of the Yamuna and the Ganges. Because there might be one drop of Amrit falling from the heavenly planets. If I can touch that drop, I'll get immortal. All that is personal attachment. It has nothing to do with pure devotional service. Now, can it be pure devotional service? Well, if one performs a ritual activity, but only for the pleasure of the Lord and not for any personal attachment, then it can be a source of spiritual advancement. But if one has a personal motive, then it's not really beneficial. This is explained in real detail in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. It's a very interesting verse that not everybody understands.
Let's see if I can find it.
If I don't find it now, I'll come back to it. It's a very elaborate purport. And it requires a lot of thought to understand.
Okay.
So it's the sixth chapter, 40th verse. Shibhagamanvacha parthanaiveha namutra vinasasasasavidyate nakalyankritkaschit durgatim tatakakashati. So it says, the Supreme Personality of Godhead says, O son of Prita, a transcendentalist engaged in auspicious activities does not meet with destruction either in this world or in the spiritual world. One that does good, my friend, is never overcome by evil.
What is so interesting about this verse?
Prabhupada says that the purport may be understood as follows. Humanity may be divided into two sections, namely the regulated and the non-regulated. Those who are engaged simply in bestial sense gratifications without knowledge of the next life or spiritual salvation belong to the non-regulated section.
That includes almost 99% of the population.
Almost. And those who follow the principles of prescribed duties in the scriptures are classified amongst the regulated section.
The non-regulated section, both civilized and non-civilized, educated and non-educated, strong and weak, are full of animal propensities. Their activities are never auspicious, because while enjoying the animal propensities of eating, sleeping, defending, and mating, they perpetually remain in material existence, which is always miserable. On the other hand, those who are regulated by scriptural injunctions and who thus rise gradually to Krishna consciousness certainly progress in life. Okay, so up until there, we understand what's being said. But the next part can be confusing. Those who are following the path of auspiciousness can be divided into three sections, namely, one, the followers of scriptural rules and regulations who are enjoying material prosperity. Two, those who are trying to find ultimate liberation from material existence. And three, those who are devotees in Krishna consciousness. Those who are following rules and regulations in the scriptures for material happiness may be further divided into two classes. Those who are fruitive workers and those who desire no fruit for sense gratification. Those who are after fruitive results for sense gratification may be elevated to a higher standard of life, even to the higher planets. But still, because they are not free from material existence, they are not following the truly auspicious path. The only auspicious activities are those which lead one to liberation. Any activity which is not aimed at ultimate self-realization or liberation from the material bodily concept of life is not at all auspicious. Activity in Krishna consciousness is the only auspicious activity, and anyone who voluntarily accepts all bodily discomforts for the sake of making progress on the path of Krishna consciousness can be called a perfect transcendentalist under severe austerity. And because the Eightfold Yoga system is directed toward the ultimate realization of Krishna consciousness, such practice is also auspicious, and no one who is trying his best in this matter need fear degradation. So what's really, let's say, shocking here is that those who are following the rules and regulations of the scriptures for material happiness can be divided into two classes. Those who are fruitive workers and who desire no fruit, and those who desire no fruit for sense gratification. Okay. So what does this mean? This means that there are people who follow rules and regulations, and they look like devotees. But if their end game or their end goal is to enjoy, let's say, regulated sense gratification, then they are not actually on the auspicious path. And those devotees who are also enjoying material prosperity, but they're using it only for the service of the Lord, they are on auspicious path. So example of that would be like Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, and other Maharaj Yudhisthira. They have material opulence, but they're using it only for the service of the Lord. But other people who are actually enjoying that those fruits of action for sense gratification, although they're regulated, they're not on an auspicious path. So this is where the question of duty comes in. Duty means that although you have the opportunity to use material opulence for sense gratification, you don't. You use it only for the advancement of Krishna consciousness. And that may even cause some pain or some discomfort. But the devotee is not offset by it. They're happy to do it.
Just like Arjuna.
Imagine how painful it was killing all those people.
He was the most lethal person in the battlefield.
That's why he didn't want to fight, because he knew he would kill so many people, and many of them were his relatives.
But yet he acted out of duty, and it was painful.
But once he was convinced by Krishna, he did not hesitate.
Maharaj Yudhishthira did hesitate a little bit.
He didn't want to say that Aswatthama, the son of Dronacharya, was killed. So he said that Aswatthama was killed.
So he didn't want to suffer because of that.
when we act out of duty, we do not, and we're under proper guidance, and we don't have a material purpose, that's pure devotion. If we follow regulative principles, but when material opulence comes, we enjoy it, we're not on an auspicious path.
But if we use that material auspicious in the service of Krishna, that is auspicious.
So this is why you have to carefully read the scriptures, carefully read Bhagavad Gita, otherwise you can read that and not really understand what he's talking about and not ask any questions about it.
Right? I don't know, have any of you read this before?
Did you understand it like this?
Okay.
What do you mean, the next verse of Bhagavad Gita or the next verse of Srimad Bhagavatam?
The Bhagavatam, but not the Bhagavad Gita. So it's easy to misunderstand what we just read.
Yeah, this acting out of duty, and here Prabhupada says, In this verse 3:19, the Supreme is the personality of Godhead for the devotees and liberation for the impersonalists. A person, therefore, acting for Krishna or in Krishna consciousness under proper guidance and without attachment to the result of the work, is certainly making progress towards the supreme goal of life.
Arjuna is told that he should fight in the battle of Kurukshetra for the interest of Krishna because Krishna wanted him to fight.
To be a good man or non-violent man is a personal attachment. But to act on behalf of the Supreme is to act without attachment for the result.
That is perfect action of the highest degree, recommended by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna.
Vedic rituals, like prescribed sacrifices, are performed for purification in pious activities that were performed in the field of sense gratification.
But action in Krishna consciousness is transcendental.
To the reactions of good or evil work.
See, this is a very subtle and important point.
People who engage in sense gratification are recommended to perform rituals like Satyanarayana Puja or other types of rituals like that. For purification.
It doesn't mean it purifies the desire for sense gratification.
That's the difference.
Krishna consciousness, if it's practiced properly, will purify the desire for sense gratification.
Performing rituals to purify previous sins will not necessarily purify the desire to sin.
Therefore, it says, a Krishna conscious person has no attachment for this result, but acts on behalf of Krishna alone.
That's his only goal.
He engages in all kinds of activities, but is completely non-attached.
So this is a very interesting point.
And we will read on tomorrow.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna.